If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The birds are singing, the snow is almost gone, and Iowa's wild creatures are very busy. This hour, we're going to tune into the natural world around us as spring emerges. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here. Hello, Jim.
Oh, golly, oh, golly. sorry. The red ring blackbird in me. They just got me going there.
So you're out there every morning singing along?
Absolutely. Boy, they are really going after it this morning too. And the cardinals are singing, and the crows are calling. It's just amazing out there. As you said in your promo earlier, it is just amazing, the cacophony of bird songs right now.
Absolutely. It's so much fun to wake up to every morning. And of course, this hour, we want to hear your observations of spring wherever you happen to be. Things are changing everywhere. You can call and share your observations or ask questions. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim, before we really talk about spring, let's talk about winter, what we've just come through. And now that February deep freeze nearly did me in, but there were a lot of really positive things about winter in Iowa this year, weren't there?
Yeah, I tell you, as a skier, it was quite frustrating. A cross-country skier is quite frustrating for me because we probably had the best, most consistent deep snow in years, and I couldn't ski, recovering from a knee operation. So I spent much of the winter on crutches or rehabbing my knee. So looking at that snow with great longing, wanting to snowshoe or ski on it, and it was just so frustrating. But from a wildlife standpoint, it was a real boon to lots of wildlife. Yes, it is deeper and harder to get around for some critters, But I tell you, that consistent snow cover over most of the state of Iowa for that very, very cold month provided the insulation, the airspace, the dead airspace between those snowflakes and that deep snow provides insulation for the critters underneath it. So a lot of the hibernators that were in logs or underground, that was wonderful for them because it kept that frost lining from going so deep into the ground. It also provided for those that were still active, the voles, the least weasels, a lot of the things that are active under the snow, it provided wonderful insulation for them. Rabbits that were underneath, or birds that were underneath brush piles or log piles, had extra insulation on top with that deep snow cover around them. So it really was a real boon to lots of critters. In fact, you'll see some of that now as the snow disappears. I think in central Iowa, it's almost entirely gone. I see a little snow on north-facing slopes, but or in deep shade areas, but not much. It's, the last few days have really erase most of the snow. I know northern Iowa probably still has some, but it differs across the state as we get into different zones. But one of the evidence you'll see of the critters that were active was probably in a lot of people's yards. And I used to get phone calls when I was extension wildlife specialist about this. About this time of year, my golly, there are little tunnels all over my lawn. Terrible, terrible problem. No, it's really not. Those are the winter tunnels of a little mouse-like critter called a vole, V-O-L-E, meadow voles. And They make those little tunnels under the snow, and in the wintertime, when there's plenty of cover of snow, they're active all over the place. But once spring comes and the snow cover is removed, they have to retreat to the tall grasses and weeds around your lawn. So you don't have to worry about them. But the evidence of where they were, often ending at your underneath your bird feeder, where they ate spilled bird seed in underneath that snow, those tunnels often kind of all pointed towards the bird feeders. So it's really a non-problem, but it's great evidence of where they were, the activity that was under the snow.
Well, and one of the great things about the snow, this is a completely different show, Jim, but the snow really showed us what was going on out there. If you spent time, and I know with your knee you couldn't, but for those of us who could get out and go tromping through that snow, we could see the tunnels of the rodents right underneath the snow. We could see evidence of raptors swooping down and eating those rodents. I mean, there was right. A lot of stuff going on out there, and it was all kind of visible this year because of that deep snow cover.
Yeah, and the tracking in the snow from deer, from rabbits, from raccoons, or the occasional possum that would come out, from the mink if you're near a marsh, otters if you're near a river. All of those tracks were very, very visible this year. And for those of you who are outside in the winter, it was a wonderful winter for doing that tracking. It really was a spectacular winter for that. So you're absolutely right. It really provided lots of entertainment for those folks, most of us, in fact, who spent a lot of time at home. I think we gained a new appreciation for the critters with whom we share this Iowa landscape, because all over the state, every park saw increases in the numbers of people getting out. It gave people an opportunity to reacquaint themselves with their home landscape, and day after day after day, in some cases. But it was really a wonderful winter for doing that. So despite the cold of February, despite the very deep snow, which causes problems, of course, for some folks who get stuck in it and that, it really was an amazing winter in terms of wildlife.
One of the really fun things about this time of year, especially this year, we've had such a rapid melt. Things have changed so dramatically from one day to the next and one week to the next. But those animals that we've been watching all winter long suddenly rearranged their schedules. For example, in our yard, we've been watching hawks all winter that have been roosting up in our trees and waiting for something to move across that snowy field. And they're doing other things now. I mean, everybody kind of rearranges themselves.
Yeah, they certainly do, and they go to their spring and summer habitats, and they're not always the same. Even though you have resident critters, the winter habitat is very different from the spring and summer habitat, because those habitats, the needs of the critters in those habitats vary by the season. For example, right now, deer are beginning to think about dropping their first fawns. It won't be long before we'll see fawns out there. And the needs of those fawns and the cover needs are very different than they are in the winter. Winter, when they're eating woody plants in order to survive, and now they have the ability to graze a little bit on more herbaceous plants, non-woody plants, and the need for cover for those young. It's very, very different than it was in the wintertime. So they've changed territories. We had, during the month of February, frequently 8 to 11 deer right in our yard. And we don't see them now. They may appear occasionally in the middle of the night, but they're just not around. They've changed. They've gone farther down into the river valley, and much better cover and much better feed for them through the summer months. So you're right. Things do change their habits, just as birds are that have spent the winter in South and Central America or in in the southern U.S. are moving back north, changing their territories. So are the local critters changing their territories. They're moving out into the summering areas, and they're often not the same place. So you're absolutely right. It's certainly a time of change.
You mentioned those animals that were hibernating under all that snow or insulated by that snow. They have already woken up, and it's been a couple of weeks. They've got a lot of work to do in the spring. I know that I've already seen a few of those critters out and about. What are we seeing with some of those animals emerging?
Yeah, the true hibernators include things like bats, and they're probably moving around, although I haven't seen any bats in the evening sky. They don't usually come out even in the summertime until it's at least, you have nights in the 50s when they can get out and they need flying insects in order to emerge. So bats, which are hibernating, actually are probably still waiting it out a little bit. They might be out a little bit, but I haven't heard any reports of any yet.
I haven't seen any yet either. No. Nope.
Yeah. So, and do you have a house full of them?
No,
upstairs?
I do not.
But other critters are emerging. The 13-lined ground squirrels, if they're not already out, I'm sure they must be out in southern Iowa, central Iowa. I have yet to see them along the roadsides, but I'm sure they'll be out soon. Woodchucks will, if they're not already out, I, again, haven't seen any. I'm not doing extensive traveling around, I'm sure I would have seen them. So they should be out. Both of those are true hibernators. Then you have the critters that go on sort of long sleeps and wake up to feed occasionally. The things like possums and skunks and chipmunks, all of those are out and active now as well. So yeah, things are certainly waking up and getting in shape for the spring season, be it having young or breeding or avoiding predators, fattening up again. Especially those hibernators, they have to put on layers of. They've lost a lot of weight over the wintertime, living off their fat reserves, and so they're now beginning to regain some of that weight as the plants emerge. They will begin to feed on them and regain some of that weight.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and you are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
Iowa Republican leaders encourage wearing a mask at the Capitol, but oppose making it a mandate.
We have no way to enforce that, even if we were to say everyone in the caucus has to have a mask.
This worries Democratic leaders.
I'm concerned and want to avoid, you know, turning the legislature into a super spreader event.
Legislative leaders share their goals and concerns, and so does the governor on the podcast Under the Golden Dome. Listen to the new episode now at iowapublicradio.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about spring and all of the wild creatures that emerge this time of year, what they are up to, where they've been, what they're doing now, and how we can see, hear, and enjoy this season. You can join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'd love to hear about what you're seeing and experiencing right now, and also your questions. 866-780-9100. With me, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He's Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. And Jim, we were talking earlier about some of the creatures that are out and about now. Now, even if we don't see those creatures, we can see signs of them, even though the snow is gone, all that easy tracking is over. But what can
you
we
bet.
See if we look around right now?
Yeah, the easy tracking is over. But if you begin to look before the leaves come out, it's just a great time. My wife and I were out for a walk yesterday, and we found where a rabbit had obviously been a meal for something, and you could tell what had eaten it because it had been plucked. Oftentimes, when mammals, like say a fox or a coyote eats a rabbit, they'll tear it into pieces. Birds, on the other hand, including owls and hawks, they will pluck the fur and leave it behind before they begin to eat the muscle, the meat of the rabbit. So this area, maybe 4 feet, 5 feet in diameter, with all this plucked fur, and clearly the rabbit had been taken, probably by an owl, because we've got barred owls on our property as well. So there are lots of evidence, and you can see these things now before the leaves come out on the trees. Look for shed antlers of deer. Those are out there as well. Bird feathers, piles of bird feathers are also evidence that things have been taken by a predator. And in the case of, for example, a sharp-shinned hawk or a Cooper's hawk, again, they pluck the bird before getting at some of the meat. So the evidence of things is there. We found the castings, the pellets cast out by owls. Owls have digestive systems that allow them to, don't allow them to process the meat or the feathers and bones or the fur and bones. But if they ingest some of that, it gets kind of glommed up into a pellet that they regurgitate. And those pellets can be found, and you can take them apart after they're dry, of course, and determine what fur it was or where the bones are from. You can tell how many voles or shrews they've eaten through the winter. All those things. It's great fun. It's a project that a lot of students in schools do at the grade school and junior high level. But it's a great project for families as well. So look for these things that are evident in the in parks and wild areas all over the state, and you can tell what the stories are that went on there.
We do have an observation from Patrick. He says, I saw two bats in Collins, Iowa last night around 7 to 7:30. So bats have been spotted.
Wow.
And Alan in Iowa City says, last Sunday, we saw a large colony of what I think are ring-billed gulls sitting on an icy pond. Groups of them would take off and spiral high into the sky. Gulls returning to the pond often performed amazing acrobatic maneuvers before landing. Jim, what was going on there?
Well, they're feeling their wings, as it were. They're feeling like spring, and they're behaving in fun ways. I think they were sort of celebrating that the snow is gone and they're moving back north. Even though there's still ice in the ponds, they know that ice is not long for those ponds. Those ponds will soon be open for them. And there's lots to eat. Lots of fish and other things die through the winter, get encased in that ice, and there will be gull food galore out there as soon as that ice goes. So it'll be a real wonderful meal, lots of meals for the gulls. So they were, I think they were celebrating probably.
Well, I know how I feel when the sun's shining and things are warming up, and I watch my dogs behaving like idiots because they're so happy. I have to imagine that everybody feels pretty much the same way. Let's go to the phones. Katie's on the line in Polk City. Hi, Katie.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I found a tree frog in one of my flower pots at the beginning of the winter when we brought it in. So I've been keeping him hibernating throughout the winter, and I just brought him back outside yesterday. And put him in a hole and covered him loosely with leaves. I'm hoping he didn't miss his hibernation window. He is still alive. And I was just wondering when the toads and the tree frogs kind of come out and start to show up again.
What a great question.
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're anticipating some of the stuff we're going to talk some more about later in the program. But we can talk about it right now since you asked the question. Absolutely. As soon as the ice is out and the waters begin to warm a little bit, you'll begin to see some frog activity if you're out there, or begin to soon after. after. It's probably going to be, it all depends on how quickly March warms up, but it sounds like next week it's going to get back to normal again, temperatures in the 40s instead of the 60s and 70s. So we'll probably delay it until probably the late March, early April, before you first begin to hear some of the very first frogs that call. They might be spring peepers or some of the other very, very small frogs. The frog that you overwintered, which is probably the gray tree frog, even though it might be green because it was on your plants, they do change colors with their background. The gray tree frogs will not begin until later in the spring and early summer before they're one of the later frogs that calls. But you overwintered it just fine if you kept it in hibernation. We have our plants outside in the summertime and bring them in the fall. And occasionally we will bring in one of the gray tree frogs on the plants. And where we keep them in a sunroom, most of our plants are in a sunroom, it warms up. It's kept pretty cool in the 60-degree range. And as long as they get a little spray on them through the winter to maintain moisture, they will do just fine through the winter, living off fat reserves, believe it or not. And you probably did just fine putting it back out, and as long as you covered it up there with some leaves and soil to help it so that it won't freeze over the next few weeks here, a couple of weeks anyway, it should do fine. What they need, though, of course, just as the birds that are coming back that eat insects, they've got to have food. Somebody mentioned the bats as well. There are a few insects out flying, but very few yet. And so we need to have insects before the frogs will do very, very well. So watch for insects. And I would say you did well overwintering it, and he should be fine.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got a great shot. Katie, thank you so much for that call and your question. And we will start to hear the frogs soon. I certainly haven't yet. How about you, Jim?
No, I haven't. Nothing yet. In fact, our pond still has some ice on it, so it's not quite time for them to be out. I expect spring peepers, especially with cold coming back next week. I don't think I'll hear spring peepers, and probably until maybe the last week of March, but probably the first week in April. All depends on how quickly those waters warm up.
Yeah, I might go to sleep next week, too. just trying to wait it out. This has been so good. All right, let's go back to the phones. George is on the line in Jordan. Hi, George.
Yeah, hi. Hey, we live out on the flatland in the Des Moines Lobe, and we have a big windbreak. And every winter, it seems like we have a great horned owl that comes. And we just wondered, is it the same great horned owl every winter? And we want to know, it doesn't seem to have a mate or anything. We just wondered, where does it go now that spring's coming?
Great question. He's probably taking advantage of the windbreak and eating the rabbits that are also taking advantage of your windbreak. The great horns are terrific rabbit hunters. And in the windbreak, the great horns will find plenty of food. They like a more heavily wooded area, and probably returning. Are you, what river are you near, George?
Oh, I'm about, 20 miles north of the Raccoon River, north of Jefferson.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's lots of woods along some of those rivers, and, they probably will nest in that river valley and the woods along that river valley. They generally won't nest in a windbreak because it's not enough cover around for them. They like a little more protection from the crows and the red-winged blackbirds and other birds that harass them in the summertime. I spent a lot of time paddling Iowa rivers, especially over the last 6 years for the Water Trails program. And frequently I will see along those rivers as I come around a bend. I'm a solo paddler, so I'm pretty quiet. And I'll come around a bend, and there'll be great horned owls that will come off the riverbank. And for a long time, I thought, well, maybe they're nesting in holes because they like cavities, although they'll take a sort of a broken treetop and occasionally steal an old red wings nest or red tails nest. But they prefer a cavity to nest in and around. So I thought for a while they were nesting in the tree banks. But I think what was happening is that they're just escaping those birds that were harassing them, the crows, the blue jays, the red-winged blackbirds, the orioles, all those birds just harass them. Once they would fly up, oh, my golly, the woods would come alive and they would start attacking them. So in your windbreak, there's just not enough protection from their harassers. So they might spend part of the winter there because they don't have those harassers around, but they'll nest probably in the Raccoon River Valley. So great observation. And yeah, it could be the same one for a number of years in a row. They're fairly long-lived birds. 10, 12 years is not all that unusual for great horned owls.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, George. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your observations and your questions as spring is springing all around us right now. 866-780-9100. And as soon as I say I haven't seen something, Jim, a listener has. So Susan tells us that she heard spring peepers in the marsh that feeds their pond just yesterday. So that's wonderful to hear.
Really?
And
wow.
I know that you have a lot of bird feeders, you have a lot of bird houses, Jim, and I know that it's time to do some work there. Miriam in Des Moines wants to know if it's too late to put out wren houses.
Oh, not at all. Wrens aren't back yet. In fact, I just took some bird gourds and made wren holes and hung them up this weekend. So absolutely. In fact, you could probably put wren houses up over the next several weeks, and the wrens would still explore them. But it is time. It is time to if you've got bird houses up, it's time to clean them out. Yes, you think, well, you're saving them all the work of putting the sticks in there. But what happens is that not only do those sticks get occupied, or those bird houses get occupied by mice sometimes in the wintertime, and you want to clean those out, but they also might harbor disease of fungi or bacteria that you don't want in there. So clean out that house, scatter the contents of it, and let them build anew each year. So it's good to clean out your birdhouses now, and especially if you're a bird feeder, now is absolutely the time, and don't delay it. Clean up underneath where your bird feeder is. Through the winter, there are lots of feces from the birds that drop underneath it, along with all those shells and waste feed that they don't eat or they drop out of their beaks, whatever. And it kind of builds up underneath the feeder. And as the weather warms, and particularly this week, it's been problematic, we'll get a little rain, that stuff starts to compost, starts to cook. And as it's cooking, it can create ideal conditions for salmonella. Salmonella is a bacterium that will breed very, very readily in that, especially with all the feces in there. And just like when people get salmonella, if birds get it, they get the runs, as it were, and can kill them quite readily. So clean up underneath that bird feeder, compost that, or put it in your garbage. Make sure that it is not available for all those ground feeders that are still here. We still have juncos, for example. Juncos are those little gray birds with the pink bills that feed mainly on the ground. And they haven't headed back up north to the boreal forest yet. And so they're still feeding, and we still have some white-throated sparrows and some of those. A lot of birds prefer to feed on the ground, and you don't want them feeding in that cooking mass of waste material underneath your bird feeder. So clean that up now and get rid of it. So build and repair houses, absolutely. They'll be here soon, but it's not too late at all to get birdhouses up and get those ones that you've got up cleaned out.
Well, and we only have about a minute before the break, Jim, and we're going to spend significantly longer than a minute talking about spring migration. But this is such an exciting time of year because you see species that don't necessarily spend very much time here. I mean, this is the time when a lot of species are on the move, right?
Yeah, spring migration is just fabulous. You know, growing up along the Mississippi, as I did in southeastern Iowa, it used to be that the geese that we saw going over were in the spring and the fall only, because geese didn't nest in Iowa in the 50s and 60s when I grew up down there. I'm aging myself. When you'd hear geese going over, you'd jerk your head up and watch those V's of geese way high up in the air following that flyway north or south, being whether it was in the winter or the fall. And that was the only time we ever saw them. And now, of course, they're all over the state. But being outside over the weekend, we'd see some real high V's way the heck up there, barely visible, and we knew those were migrating. The local ones still hanging there pretty low, but if you see those high V's of geese, or even, especially if you're along either coast, but even through central Iowa now, we get snow geese that are actually migrating through. And I've had a number of reports of snow geese over along the Mississippi and the Missouri. And we'll talk about other things as well.
All right. We'll take
what to listen for.
A short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Spring is springing here in Iowa, and this hour we are tuning into the natural world around us and talking about what we can see, hear, and observe out there right now. You are welcome to join the conversation with your observations and your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim Pease is here with me, Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. We just started talking about migration before the break, and we will talk more about that in a moment. We've got a couple of questions to get to on the line right now. Joseph is on the line in Webster City. Hi, Joseph. Joseph, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I'm here. Well, it's really nice to hear Jim talk about all these things, but why is it that the bigger birds, like the red-tailed hawks and the owls, how is it they let these other birds pick on them instead of turning on them and chasing them away?
That's a great question. It is surprising because owls. Let's take owls first of all. Owls are, nocturnal. They're night hunters, and during the daytime they like to roost and sleep. And while they may pick off other critters at night, great horned owls, for example, are primarily they hunt small mammals like rabbits and that sort of thing. They're not big bird eaters, although they will occasionally take a bird, a large bird, if they can. But during the daytime, they're trying to sleep and they're trying to blend in with the trees, you know. But it's kind of like the school bully. Growing up, there was always one kid who seemed to be kind of a bully, and sometimes the people being bullied would turn on him, and that didn't work so well for the bully then. And that's what kind of happens with red tails and owls sometimes. Yes, they're very effective predators, but also these smaller birds, the red-winged blackbirds and the orioles, are very territorial. very protective of their nest sites, and they're not afraid to take on. They're much more agile in the air, and they're not afraid to take on a red-tailed hawk because they know they can get out of the way quicker. And you'll often see a red-tail flying over, and red-winged blackbirds are coming down and bombing him from above, you know, just kind of pecking him in the back. And red-tail's like, oh, gee whiz, I'm going to get out of here. So, it is surprising, but being more agile and in the air especially, they can get out of the way very quickly. So, I think it's always fun to watch, but you realize the owls in particular will get them back at night. So it's a tit for tat sort of thing.
Well, and if they can do enough harassing, maybe that owl will roost somewhere else and they'll be safe.
That's right. So,
Joseph,
great question.
Thank you so much for calling. And Harlow is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Harlow.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, first of all, I'm really enjoying this conversation, too. It's great hearing Jim Pease talk about spring arriving and the changes in the animal activities. I've been studying amphibian communities at a place called Barrens Ponds and Woodlands for several decades, actually. And I was just going to note that that this year, the snowpack was so deep that the ground wasn't frozen underneath the snow where salamanders are hibernating, and the snow has melted, and the salamanders are marching to the ponds right now. Although you have to know how to look for them in order to see them, but the amphibians are going to be coming when the water temperatures warm up, like you've said, and it could just be any time. It all depends upon how the temperatures are. And if you know what to listen for, you'll be hearing different frogs, tree frogs, and toads and so forth progressing from now, different species coming to the ponds until, you know, June at least.
Right.
I just wanted to make that observation.
Yeah, well, Harlow, before you ask your question, do you have any advice for somebody who'd like to see a salamander? What's your quick tip for somebody who would like to spot one?
You know, if you are in a place where there are ephemeral ponds, which reliably dry up but have water through the first half of the summer at least, if you gently turn over rocks and logs, and be careful to put them right back where they were afterwards, you can often find amphibians of all sorts underneath rocks and stumps and logs. Another thing, if you're a night adventurer, if you go out with a flashlight on a rainy night and walk along the edges of ephemeral ponds, you can catch them on the way to the ponds. And that's another good strategy for salamanders.
Nice.
I was gonna suggest that maybe tomorrow night, it sounds like when we've got rain through the night, that'd be a great evening to get out there and see if it's not a thunderstorm or something.
The blue spots that I'm most interested in are explosive breeders, and so, you know, the whole population will come to a breeding pond and will breed in about a week or 10 days' time, and then return back to the uplands after that. So, you know, when that arribada occurs, you can see a lot if you're out in the rain with a flashlight.
Nice. And so, Harley, you also had a question, too, right?
Yeah. I think Jim is asking something.
Jim, you go.
I was going to ask you a question first, here in central and western Iowa, last summer we had a severe drought. And what we've noticed is the snow has melted. There's very little runoff. We're not seeing rivers and streams come up dramatically like they would normally with over a foot of snow on the ground. It's just sinking in, which is great for recharging the groundwater. But we're not seeing those ephemeral pools in the woodlands that we normally see this time of year. Is that a factor in eastern Iowa at all? Is that a worry?
There's good water at the ponds where I do my work.
Okay.
So they should be in good shape.
Good. Yeah, okay.
Then I've got a question for you, Jim.
Okay.
And that is, you know, the derecho came through Cedar Rapids and really devastated parks and woodlands here as well as everything else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was not seeing much deer sign in Beaver Park, which is close to my home. There, historically, it would be no trick to see 10 or 15 or 20 deer on a walk around the park. And I wasn't seeing them. When you look at it, it's hard to imagine that tree fall didn't take out deer. Has there been any reports of that?
You know, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. I thought the same thing. It's one of those things that you expect to, once the snow is gone, to find dead deer underneath some of those trees. And we may see that yet. But I haven't heard any reports of that. It certainly makes sense that some would be killed by falling trees, just as some squirrels and any tree nesters were, that were in the tree were actually injured or killed by falling trees. I'm not surprised that they, have changed locations. Certainly, with a loss of 65% is the figures I've seen of the tree cover in the forest cover in the Cedar Rapids area. Certainly, woodland critters like deer are going to be impacted. So to see them maybe change their winter habits for a few years, I'm not surprised. From a positive standpoint, it's going to promote young forests, and deer love young forests because there's much more food for them to feed on. So eventually they'll come back and they'll do fine. But it may take a while before you see them back in that park in any numbers again. So, yeah, it's a great observation.
Harlow, thank you so much for your call. And we've got a lot of other people on the line as well. Randall's up next in Oskaloosa. Hi, Randall.
Yes, Jim. You were talking about owls earlier, and one of my concerns is I see an increase in the population of barred owls down here around the Oskaloosa-Grinnell area, and a lot of people don't know that the barred owls will eat the screech owls, and so I just wonder if this increase in the barred owl population, is that going to affect the screech owl population?
It's possible, certainly, that screech owls aren't one of their, favorites. But just like, foxes and coyotes don't get along, and coyotes and wolves don't get along, but wolves and foxes seem to do okay together. It's that, increase in size. I think the same is true. Barred owls and great horned owls don't nest near one another because they don't get along. And barred owls and screech owls often compete for those nest cavities as well. So they don't get along. But so when you see an increase in one species, sometimes you'll see temporary decreases in another, but over time it'll balance itself out. But it's quite possible that fewer screech owls will be in a certain area, not the overall population of the eastern Iowa or something, but certainly you'll in a certain area you may see increases and decreases depending on the competing species around them. So, yeah, quite possible.
All right, Randall, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Jack in Ames. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, we live on a large lot in Ames, and we've had a pair of foxes that have pretty much been living around our place all winter. And we know from talking to our neighbor that they've taken a bunch of rabbits and a couple of chickens. And I was wondering if they might, den and stay here.
Quite possibly. Fox populations come and go with the prey population, and they're very well adapted to living in cities. At one point on the Iowa State University campus, I knew of three different foxes, fox dens, three separate foxes in and around the campus area. And in fact, there are lots of rabbits and lots of ground squirrels and chipmunks, and they'll feed very heavily on those. And as those populations ebb and flow through time, so do the fox populations. They're also impacted by availability of food, but also by disease. And so mange frequently is a skin disease that gets into fox populations and will severely impact foxes in a given area for a year or two, and then you'll see the gradual comeback of fox populations. From what I've heard this year around Ames, there are several, quite a few pairs of foxes in different parts of the city. And yeah, if they have a chance to, if they've got a good porch or an old building, an outbuilding, a garden shed or something to nest underneath, they'll take advantage of it, absolutely. So they might very well stick around the neighborhood, as long as there's food to eat.
Well, and part of this pandemic year, Jim, some people think that there's more wildlife because of the pandemic year, although I think we're just watching in a new way. We're seeing a lot more of these critters than we have been in the past because we're not rushing around quite as much. We only have a couple of minutes left, Jim, and we started talking about migration. What are some of the things, especially with birds right now, because there's just so much happening, what are some of the things that we should keep our eyes open for in the next few weeks?
Eyes and ears. So red-winged blackbirds, I mentioned earlier, they're back, they're singing, they're okaleeing on every pole and little high weed in the ditches. There's a bird called the woodcock. This is a shorebird that actually breeds in Iowa. They're fairly secretive, funny-looking bird. You can look them up on the Internet. But woodcocks are back, and they'll soon begin painting. This is something that happens at dusk and dawn, and maybe we can do another show on the sounds of spring. But we'll hear that as the males strut around out in the grassland. Killdeer are back. We're seeing lots of ducks on ponds and lakes now. As the ice goes out, even little openings, you're seeing diving ducks especially. And soon the puddle ducks will be back. I have heard a friend of mine called and said there was a green-winged teal already. It's early for them, but the teal will be coming back. But things like scaup and mergansers and lots of ducks are coming back. I mentioned geese, but also the swans are coming back. The cranes, the sandhill cranes, are on the route, on the way. And if you haven't ever seen a migration of sandhill cranes, go out to Nebraska, to the areas between Kearney and Grand Island. It's an amazing spectacle of 500,000 cranes coming through there and living along the Platte River for a few days. It's an amazing, amazing spectacle. Turkey vultures, I've heard, are back. I haven't seen them yet here in Central Iowa, but I've heard of some in Des Moines, so I know they're around, and certainly in Southern Iowa, they're back already. Eagles, bald eagles were already sitting on eggs, the old pairs.
And you can see them on the Decorah Eagle Cam, of course.
Yes. Great horned owls are sitting on eggs already. Barred owls are beginning to nest this month. This is a month for barred owls nesting. And so they're going to soon be on eggs. So there's all kinds of stuff happening. We're hearing cardinals and chickadees and robins. Woodpeckers are drumming that. That's not a drilling into wood sound, that's a territorial sound, and the male woodpeckers of all different species will drum on everything from drain pipes to hollow trees to telephone poles. Whatever gives them the biggest territory, they're using that drumming to set up their territory. So it's a great time of year to be out there.
Absolutely. Go outside and enjoy it. Jim Pease, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yes. To reiterate, wildlife biologist Jim Pease is Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. Enjoy the weather. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.